Welcome back to Coaches on the Beach. It's championship week in college beach volleyball. Obviously, Colin Wilson here, and you all know our esteemed co-host, Michael Hobson. We're going to cut straight to the chase, right? We're not going to mess around. Michael, you want to give us a little bit about what's going on with you? I think we've seen the news and that you are no longer at ULM. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I have resigned from my position as the ULM Beach head coach. It comes with a heavy heart. There is nothing I care more about than these young ladies that are on this team currently, the recruits that we had committed in 2024, 2025. Lauren Erickson, our graduate assistant coach, who has been thrown into this head coaching role. She knows I always got her back, so if she needs me, I'm just a phone call away. But it was a decision that was made with a very, very heavy heart, lots of talking, going through the process with family, and just felt like this was going to be the best route for the situation that we were being put in. It's something that I don't care to talk about on air like this. I've put my Facebook, my Instagram post out there, and if you feel inclined that you really, really need to know the details, give me a call, give me a text. We'll set up something and I'll tell you the full story if you really want to know it. But this is a situation that I believe, and Colin is one of those people that knows the full story. It happens to the situation happens to a lot of people out there. And sometimes in our eyes, the action and the consequence do not even out the scales. And I believe this might be one of those times for me, but it was something that could have used some recourse, some correction, and I was willing to accept any consequence that was given to me. The consequence that was given to me, though, was the ultimate end date. The normal plan was that we were going to go through the 2 weeks of season, and I was going to get to finish out the season with the team before we both stepped away from what we were doing. So everything was cordial, everything was good, and then something happened on Wednesday night before we traveled down to Tulane, and the decision was more of a, we think it's best if we just stop this here, and we both go our separate directions to start our processes forward. Again, in the situation that I was put in, and I'm gonna let Colin speak on this after I get done talking here, but in the situation I was put in, I think the consequences far outweigh what actually happened. And I think where we're moving forward, I didn't have much power after the whole initial talk went on. And that it's frustrating in a way that it's affecting our team so heavily. We had a very big game coming up on Friday against Southern Miss, a game that we had been preparing for all week, and I felt like we were ready for it. And then an emotional tornado just tore through our team. Talking with the team on Wednesday night, there was not a dry eye, including my own, in that locker room. I'm kind of holding myself back right now. I told myself no more tears. We're moving forward. These girls can do so many great things, and they know it. We've prepared them for this. I feel like having a week now to kind of rebounce and refocus themselves, and they know that I'm going to support them all the way through. I think you'll see a different ULM team this weekend at the conference championship than you did last week at Tulane, but telling the team it was an easy one. They were very emotional. I was very emotional. But the biggest factor I'm taking away from this whole thing was that the team went in and they fought for me. parents started reaching out to administration, and I think that could have had a feeler of what might have happened come this past weekend and into this upcoming weekend of why we needed to separate our ties. But usually you hear about these stories of coaches resigning before season ends, and it's usually because a player has a problem or a parent has a problem. And obviously our players and our parents know the full story of what's going on, and they were still 100% on board with me, and the amount of support I've received just from our players and parents has been fantastic. It makes me feel like I accomplished what I set out to accomplish here. We were able to do some really, really good things, some things that I'll take away. And I don't know if a 31-4 season record will ever be beat, so I might live on in the ULM history books forever. And then after that post I sent out, just the amount of support I've received from the community, from friends, from family, the amount of phone calls I've had, text messages, social media messages, even from the podcast, people were reaching out and saying that they listened to the show, and I don't know if they were afraid the show was going to go away or what, but it was very eye-opening, and it's exactly why I do what I do. It's why after this season, like, I want to get back into coaching. I want to take these last week, this next week, and really enjoy my family, enjoy my wife. But at the same time, like, after this, like, we're both all in to find that next coaching spot. Got some good people looking out for me, thank goodness. So hopes are high that we find our way back into a coaching, and we're going to have another episode of The Decision. But this time it's going to be about me and not about Colin. But I cannot thank those out there enough for showing me the support. And if you want to show support, I got some free time on my hands now. Reach out, text me, call me. We'll set something up, and we'll have a little chit chat. I love reconnecting with people, and over the past couple years, being in the beach volleyball community, it made me realize, like, competition is great. I live for competition. I live and die by competition. But at the same time, like, the people are the reason we do this. The young women that we are helping mentor, the supporters out there, and our fellow colleagues of coaches. Obviously, we have two coaches that used to be in the same conference on the podcast every week, and we share ideas. We share stories, and beach volleyball is something special, and I don't want to lose that in my life, and I don't think I'm going to. It's just a matter of got to be patient, got to find the right one for the family, for myself, and it's going to come. So that's kind of my piece. So Colin, what you got to say about that?
Yeah, obviously it's an emotional time, and I think the first question, which you answered well, right, was always when you see step down, you wonder, is everything okay at home, right? And I can say, you know, Michael and Zephyr are doing well, right? Family's doing okay. Mm-hmm. The other follow-up question is usually, are you getting out of coaching? The answer is, oh, heck no. I'm going to see this guy on a sideline for many, many years to come. I think one of the things we talk about when we talk about leading our athletes and leading our the young women that we talked about, right, and the adults that are through our program, right, I would expect my team to always voice their opinions when they feel like they need to, right, always to share and to challenge. I ask them to challenge us all the time when it comes to volleyball. And part of that comes from the belief that there are enough people out there in the world that are going to push young women around that I don't need anybody that's just going to sit there and take it. We want to create strong young women that are going to go out there and are going to fight for what's right, because at the end of the day, that's the important skill, right? That's the piece that we're learning. Can you be the person that is going to tell the boss, hey, I think we need to do this because it'll be better for the company or better for the group or whatever, challenging the head of household. And I would say that this is an unfortunate opportunity that they're getting to do that, because like you talked about, the repercussions for what happened, I would say feel a little lopsided. The balance isn't there. And at first I was wondering if, like, hey, maybe that's just me, because obviously we talked every week on a podcast, and I was like, all right, I'm a little biased here. And so I started doing some probing around, you know, other, you know, talking to people and going, hey, you know, here's what happened. Because obviously I got some texts too that said, hey, what happened to Michael? And I talked a little bit, and the more I come to realize, the more I think, you know, if that were to happen to one of our athletes, if they were to be put in the same situation as you, kicking them off the team would feel like a bit of an overreaction. Telling them to go away would feel like a bit of an overreaction. And so, yeah, they're younger, so maybe we expect different things, but I'd say all in all, the general consensus is this is a really unfortunate scenario to put a human being in. And I don't think there's anybody out there. I would hope there's nobody out there in the beach volleyball community that wants to see somebody lose their job. And I would especially not want to see somebody who's poured as much into a program as you have be put in this position. But ultimately, I try to also buy into the idea that it's all worked out so far. And so my philosophy is that it will continue to work out. And I think in my eyes, this working out is maybe that I don't have to compete against your team anymore. at least not with you there, right? We joked earlier this year where you asked me about a film trade. And I said, no, I'm not giving you any more film on my team because I know you're going to watch it. Well, Michael, as long as we don't play each other in a conference tournament anymore, you can have all the film you want, no matter where you go. If you go to another Sunbelt school, we might have to have a talk. But I think whatever this greener pasture will be, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be another opportunity for you to grow. But obviously, the impact that you've had at ULM on that team, on those people, that will be felt more than just a record book. Right. It'll be felt by the players and the support staff there, you know, as they continue on through life. So that's the part. If you really want to show support, I firmly believe that will be the way to show Michael that love is, you know, it can be easy to agree, but to remind him of how great this past couple of years have been for that school and that program is probably going to mean a whole heck of a lot. So,
yeah. And I want to say one more thing before we get on to championship week and we stop this somber attitude is, like, I really don't have any hard feelings towards ULM. It's still emotional time. Like, we're still very fresh into it. I hope this program continues to thrive off the things that we've done these past 2 years. I don't want to see this program die. I don't want to see anything happen that would affect these kids that are coming in. I think as much as you need a leader in front of them, these ladies made it so easy for me just to show them the way, and they took it and they ran with it, no matter what it was. And I think that's something truly special. And there's this really, truly strong group here at ULM. And I can't wait to see what they do in the future, whether it be sticking together, going off on their individual path, whatever it may be. I have no clue. Again, no hard feelings towards administration. They did what they thought they had to do. Again, it's their call. It's no one else can control it, but the thing that I've reminded myself and the thing that I've told everyone that I've talked to is, like, God has a plan for us. And if this is the plan for me, like, I'm going to keep working my ass off. I'm going to keep putting myself out there. I'm going to keep doing everything I need to do because I saw how I was able to affect others' lives, and they will never see it maybe, but how much they affected me because of me just being open, just being completely open and honest with them, and the support, the love, everything. Like, that's what it's about. That is what my life is about. I don't know about your guys's, but my life is about this support of, hey, let's do things together. Let's make each other better people, and let's keep fighting for what we think is right. But I, again, no hard feelings towards ULM. If you want to know what happened, again, I'm more than capable, and I would just ask in respect. Like, I've seen other coaches go through similar situations like this where they've resigned or they've been let go or whatever it may be, and you start having the people talk behind the scenes. And yeah, saying it to another coach, just kind of hearing the rumor, trying to figure out what happened behind the scenes, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to be open and honest with you. So just come talk to me. If you don't know what happened, please don't spread rumors that could potentially impact my life down the line.
Yeah, speculation's a killer. To kind of try to make light of it a little bit, you did say a moment in there where, you know, I hope the kids know how much they've meant to me. And all I could keep thinking of is that scene in School of Rock when Jack Black goes, "Listen, I have touched your kids.
I don't need any more trouble.
It's a funny scene because it's innocuous. Okay, anyway, I digress. That's me making light. Mission accomplished. We're moving on. It's championship week. We already have one NCAA tournament bid punched, baby. Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, the Islanders. Congratulations to Gail Stammer and her Islanders crew. Back-to-back-to-back Southland Conference champions, if I'm not mistaken. They lost early to Boise State. Fought through the loser's bracket real quick, and then came back and got revenge, taking down Boise State in the final 3-2. It's the stuff dreams are made of. It came down to the ones. It came down to a third set. If you listened to our last week's episode and I talked about playing it on ESPN+, I was half right. It was supposed to be played on ESPN+. I don't know about anybody else. I kept trying to check streams. It kept saying technical error. So live stats were luckily up. Able to keep track on that. I hope that they will fix that going forward, because that's a big part of the viewership for our sport. Mm-hmm. And I would like to continue to see as many eyes as possible getting on it. But Texas A&M Corpus Christi will await their fate 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time this coming Sunday. We will get the whole field announced, but we have a few more automatic bids to determine. Michael, what conference should we start with?
Well, before we get into that, we did have a viewer question this week from Zach Gale. I believe you know him very well.
Fresh off his wedding, fresh off getting married.
So
good old Zach Gale, man, the myth, legend. He also asked our questions last week.
before we get into too much of it, let's go through this question and get back into the coaching mindset of. He asked, do you rotate which flight you want to coach every match, every weekend, or do you guys try to keep it consistent? And what determines that? So if you want to take that one first, since you're still the coach.
Yeah, I think we try to stay consistent. Like, consistency would be cool, but sometimes, you know, if something ain't working, it might not be the pair's fault. Sometimes it's the energy. Mm-hmm. I think you'll notice every coach provides something a little bit different. And so ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to put the coach that provides what that pair needs. And last I checked, they're all human beings, so they do kind of change and vary. And things will slightly adjust for them. And so if we need to, coaches will rotate. But I would say for the most part, you'll try to find some version of consistency. You know, for example, this year, Blom's, our assistant coach, has taken our ones pair for most of the year. I think I've been with our threes pair for a good chunk of the season. We've all kind of rotated on the 2-4-5 a little bit, just mm-hmm. depending on if it was an evens or an odds. But yeah, I think you're shooting for consistency, right? If you can find a flow that works, that's great. But if the flow needs to change, the flow needs to change. And luckily we have three coaches, and so we've been able to change the flow up a lot this year.
Yeah. I think it also is kind of determined on how the tournament's set up. Sometimes you're playing two flights, and sometimes that's even odd. Sometimes it's 4, 5, 6 first. And then there's other tournaments like the conference tournaments that are coming up that will be played 5 courts across. So there's a lot that goes into that decision. And sometimes for us, when we only have two coaches and there's at least three courts being played, we'll do the week prior. We'll start working with those individual pairs that we see are going to need our help, depending on their matchups, depending on what we're seeing, depending on what happened the previous week. Who's connecting better? What do they need for that connecting? I meant for us, Lauren is very good at that emotional game. She's very good at connecting on a personal basis, as well as turning on that switch of, hey, I'm gonna be a little bit harder on you right now. She gets very intense very quickly. For me, I try to keep it very calm, cool, collected, very even go, but I tend to talk almost 100% about strategy. When it comes to, like, if you need to figure something out on the emotional side of the game in yourself, or you're struggling there, like, I'll give you a couple brief seconds, but there's no way I can give you confidence with my words in that manner. And that's something that we prepare for, is like, you gotta be able to be the one that takes control of your confidence. You gotta be the one that gives yourself confidence, and you're only the only one that can ever take your confidence away. So that emotional side is much different. So depending on what we see coming up in the weekend, we'll flip on that, depending on which courts finish up. Sometimes you're playing in that basis of you're going right after another, that as soon as one match finishes, the next match is starting, and then you got all these weird setups of games going on, and you're supposed to be coaching two different courts, but your game's still going on from the first wave. And so you just got to be adjustable and be able to work with all your athletes, I think. But most of the time I go in with a strategy, but I think it's you that told us, like, you go in with a strategy and then 5-10 points in, that strategy's completely thrown out the window anyways.
Yeah, it's me or Mike Tyson. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. Until
you get punched in the face. That's the one.
Yeah. All right. Well, Zach, thanks for listening. Obviously, I love you, buddy, and congratulations. Go on your honeymoon. Don't listen to coaches on the beaches during that week. It'll be in June, so you got a couple weeks. But
yeah,
Zach G from Atlanta.
Getting back to conference tournaments now. And what's coming up. There wasn't too much movement this past week. When it comes to games, there's a lot of bye games, a lot of senior matches going on. I think one game to be noteworthy of is the USC-UCLA, 7th time, 9th time, 14th time they've played this season. USC comes out on top this time. But at the same time, I think those rankings are kind of out the door. It's everyone for themselves now. And so as we're getting into these conference tournament, each conference tournament is run a little bit differently here or there. I think we start with the tournament that could determine a lot of things, and that's the Pac-12.
Oh, my gosh. Pac-12 tournament, right, starts out with a play-in match, right? So they have one single limb. They've been running it. They're probably the most consistent conference tournament across the board because they've been running the 8-9 play-in game. And I'm honestly, if you told me that those have been the seedings for the Pac-12 conference tournament for the last 5 years, I'd believe you. Number one, USC. Number two, UCLA. Number three, Stanford. 4, Cal. 5, Washington. 6, Arizona State. 7, Arizona. 8, Utah. 9, Oregon. So you can see Utah and Oregon get to battle it out for a chance to play Southern Cal. After that, once it becomes an 8-team tournament, it becomes double a limb. Obviously, some things to note. Pac-12 is the only conference to have ever had an NCAA tournament champion. The winner of the Pac-12 championship has only won the NCAA tournament, I think, twice. So I think Southern Cal won the Pac-12 tournament last year, and then they won it back in 2016. But every other year, like, the opposite winner will win the NCAA tournament. So that's just kind of a fun, like, stupid little fun fact that I have for you.
Basically, what he's saying is if you get to the championship and your name is USC or UCLA, you want to throw that game because the one's in the next.
Doesn't
week.
Work out in your favor. obviously, this year, I think, or last year, we saw big upsets by Stanford and Cal in the Pac-12 tournament. I think, you know, those two teams are pretty much in. And so I'm not sure that would do too much shakeup. Meanwhile, Arizona State and Washington, however, are fighting for their lives. I think the idea that they are in no doubt makes it is not quite true. Washington on a little bit of a hot streak. Arizona State on a little bit of a slippage after losing to Arizona this week. You're going to want to solidify that bubble bid. You're going to want to solidify that bubble conversation. So keep an eye on that 4-5-3-6 matchup and how that whole thing shakes out. Arizona State being at home probably gets a little bit of love, gets a little extra oomph. So they're my pick to make a big push. But if they both go, you know, 1-2 and call it a season, one or neither of them could be in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think I was really hopeful for Arizona State. And then when they got the Stanford draw, I was like, ooh, that one hurts. Because Stanford is playing so well this season. Even though it's at Arizona State, I think one other fun fact is whoever wins this Pac-12 championship will be the forever Pac-12 champion for the rest of time. Because the Pac-12 is going away.
Michael, I'd like to make a little note when you said, you know, I felt good about them until they got the Stanford draw. What draw exactly on there would you be hoping for?
You know, if they would have got that 4 or 5 draw, I think
you feel like a Cal or a Washington matchup feels a lot better than Stanford.
I just think Stanford is playing so good this season that like that's one that I feel like Stanford has this vote of confidence in them. You know, Cal's always been in this position where they're kind of fighting for their lives at this time. And with that loss to Washington a couple weeks ago, I meant they came back this past weekend and beat Washington at Stanford. But at the same time, like, I feel like that Cal or that Washington matchup would have been one where it's like, okay. Like, maybe it's 60-40. But with a Stanford matchup, Kristen's going to pull out all the tricks in her sleeve. I don't doubt it. But at the same time, this is a really steep uphill battle.
I think the one question to always ask at this time of year is, do Stanford student athletes have finals?
Ooh.
Because that is going to be the wild card that nobody's ready for. And that's just coming from experience of having seen their indoor team on laptops in between warm-up sessions at the NCAA National Championship indoors, like trying to knock out finals work. It is a stressful time. Being a Stanford student and being a Stanford student athlete is no joke. And so, finals week, Stanford already locked up a spot in the NCAA tournament.
Their quarter system, though, right?
I know UCLA is.
I believe their quarter system. So I think they got at least another month of school left.
Maybe. I'm not sure. We could look it up, I'm sure. But I digress. The Pac-12 is going to have anywhere from 5 to 7 teams in the NCAA tournament. Keep your eye on the tournament. You can watch it on the Pac-12 network. You do need to sign in with a TV provider. So find somebody that still has a cable package and ask them to help you out. I think the next tournament that we all are curious about is the Big West tourney. Another one that'll have some implications. Another conference that is at least a 2-bid conference. But with an upset, do we have a 3-bid conference? And all of a sudden, you can almost guarantee 5 of your 8 at-large bids are spoken for by the top 10 teams in the country?
Yeah. I think – I don't even know if it takes a huge upset in this one. Like, I think if Hawaii can do what they need to do, Cal Poly does what they need to do, and if everything plays out as it should with seedings, then I think – they could be a 3-bid conference anyways. I don't think you have to have those big upsets with Cal Poly. I don't think you have to have a big upset against Long Beach. Like, I think Cal Poly and Long Beach are solidified in the tournament. I think Hawaii is that team that's on that bubble still. I think they've had a really good season. It's not traditionally what we've seen out of a Hawaii team, but like they've maintained where they've been the entire season, and that's been that 12 and up team. So in my eyes, like, I think they're a team that, yes, they're sitting on the bubble, but I think they're more in the bubble than out.
See, to me, Hawaii, you know, has had that win over Long Beach. I think a win over LSU, a win over Georgia State, which are are solid wins. You're also looking at tight matches with Texas, you know, tight match with Grand Canyon. I guess coming out wins and winning is all that matters. But to me, there's nothing that sticks out as like, oh my gosh, this gets it done. I think, you know, you lost to Cal when it counted. You lost to Florida State when it counted. You're playing Boise State tight at home. I just am not sure that this year they've done what they needed to do to be there if they don't go beat Cal Poly or Long Beach State. Now, maybe one win in the tournament does it for them. I'm not sure, but I think a loss makes that a really hard conversation.
Yeah, and I think their tournament setup is much different than most conferences in the country. So it has an opportunity to do that. And so how they do it is they do two different pools on that first day of play. And three teams from each pool get brought in. I believe it's the 2, 3, 6, and 7 seed in pool A. And then the 1, 4, and 5 in pool B. So 1, 4, and 5 will automatically make it to the second day into that single elimination tournament. And then the other pool with the four teams are going to be battling it out for top three spots. Now, with that being said, like, you have the opportunity that you might see a Hawaii and Long Beach matchup again. It's at Long Beach, Long Beach Community College, I believe. And so on that first day, there isn't too much implication other than where you're going to be seated the next day and if you get that by the first round or if you have to play against the other team's second, third seed. So there might be some good play there. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I don't know if they really need it. If they get it, I think it really helps them. I think that really helps them. And I don't think it hurts Long Beach too much or it hurts Cal Poly too much. But at the same time, like, the only way you can guarantee it is if you take care of your business. You go out there, you put it all in, you can't listen to us talking heads and think, oh yeah, they know what they're talking about. Oh no, they don't know what they're talking about. If you take care of your business and you put everything, all your effort on there, like, you've done everything you've done, and now you just gotta sit back and let God's plan come and play.
Yeah, I think if Hawaii doesn't win this and isn't at least playing in the championship, I think it becomes a little bit tougher.
Yep.
Becomes a little bit tougher for them. And I would be sitting with bated breath. Also, I'm just doing some quick math in my head. 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time means if you don't win that Big West tournament and you're back in Hawaii, you're watching this thing at, like, what, 6 o'clock in the morning? That's pretty nuts, like, to have to drag yourself out of bed with a cup of coffee at 5:30 to try to watch and see if your team all of a sudden needs to pack their bags and fly to Alabama. I would hope they're staying in California through Sunday night.
Yeah.
Just so they know. That way they know what they're kind of doing and going out to – I believe they've done that in the past.
Okay.
From one of the – couple of the deepest, craziest Pac-12 or, you know, conference tournaments to another crazy, deep conference tournament, but admittedly smaller, CCSA, going on in Huntsville. I'll get a front row seat to that. Your 1-seed Florida State, 2-seed Grand Canyon, 3-seed LSU, and 4-seed South Carolina Gamecocks. Up until last week, all four teams were ranked in the top 20, which, you know, makes them most likely to at least have one, if not two, teams in there. I think you're going to see the rematch between LSU and Grand Canyon, which could really solidify Grand Canyon as a possible at-large candidate, although I think if Hawaii's on the outside looking in, Grand Canyon's probably in the backyard. And so, you know, they would need to kind of do something special. They'd probably need to beat LSU, maybe even take a dub over Florida State to really create that. They're in a double elim. You can get eliminated. They're one of the only tournaments where you can get eliminated on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
It's them and the play-in game for the Pac-12, I think, is the only two tournaments that you can, like, be gone right out the gate. Oh, maybe CUSA also can be a gone opening day kind of deal. But So it'll be double limb. You'll see it play out over 2 days, Friday, Saturday at John Hunt Sports Park. Florida State pretty much won every year for the better part of 9 years until TCU took the dub last year. And then
Peace
TCU
out.
promptly said, "I'm out. Thank you for the trophy. We'll see you later." And so now I think it's Florida State's to win. They don't need to win. They're in. I think you're looking at Grand Canyon LSU. Really fighting for that spot, and then South Carolina kind of in do or die mode. Hey, either we take this conference dub, or we're spending, that first week of May at home watching on TV, and Grand Canyon's honestly probably sitting in that same spot. We either take this dub, or we're sitting at home watching this thing on TV, which is a spot they haven't found themselves all too recently. So, CCS fun. It's streamed on ESPN Plus. Be sure to check it out on Friday and Saturday. It'll be high level volleyball one way or the other. So
For sure.
expect to see good volleyball matchups. Headed down to the state of Louisiana, the Sugar Beach Youngsville, Louisiana tournament for Conference USA.
This
There
one
has to be.
Colin did not put together.
Colin did not put together. There has to be some great irony to there only being one Louisiana school in that entire conference and them not being located anywhere near Youngsville. You'll see the top seed being TCU, the 2 seed FIU, 3 seed FAU, 4 UAB, 5 Tulane, 6 UTEP, 7 Missouri State, 8 Tarleton, and 9 Jacksonville State. Once again, 8 versus 9 matchup should create an elimination on the first day, followed by a double elim tournament. TCU clearly the favorite. FIU won it last, or FAU won it last year, I believe. And so you'll see those two teams kind of going at it. I think TCU doesn't need to win it. I'm not even sure if they. I'm sure it'd be nice to win it. Nobody's going in there trying to lose, but it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, if we don't play our best ball, we're going to be okay. Who's really in it fighting for something? I think FIU gives themselves the best chance of actually making it should they play in that final. I think if they play in the final, they've done just about everything they can to make sure that they are in the best position to be at Gulf Shores. But by no means it's a guarantee. They've had some good wins. They've had some bad losses, played a lot of tight matches. I think, from a gamesmanship standpoint, you have to consider that their fours and fives have struggled this year. They are one of the strongest 1-2-3s in the country. And if they can find a way to shore up a point down there at the bottom of the lineup, it'll help make things a lot easier. I think FAU is very much on the outside looking in. I think their losses this past weekend have kind of moved them from bubble team to they got to win. Now they're a team with the talent to do it. I wouldn't, if you were to tell me in 3 days FAU is going to win the CUSA championship, I would be a little surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked in the way that if you told me, not to talk smack, but if like Tarleton or Missouri State, if you told me they won the Conference USA Championship, I might be like, all right, that's like what happened? You know what I mean? I'd be asking a lot more questions. If you tell me FAU wins, right, I believe that they have the talent, they have the skill, they just haven't pieced it all together. And part of that's probably their young lineup. You got a lot of freshmen, sophomores in that lineup that are kind of getting things figured out. So,
I think this is
two
one
teams
of
right
those
there.
tournaments, though, that really have big implications on those bubble teams. Because, like, FIU winning, like, that means TCU has to take a bubble spot, at large bid, which puts a team like Hawaii, or even like if LSU gets bounced early, they could find themselves on that bubble or that hot seat real quick. It puts those teams of like Washington or Arizona State, like they're now another half a step out the door. So this is a tournament that FAU could come in and just turn it on these last couple of days. If TCU doesn't win it, like it could have some big implications on who that last at-large bid goes to.
What I would say is for the next however many conferences we're talking about, 2, 3, 5, for the next 5 conferences, I would all consider them, sorry, for the next 4 conferences, I would consider them all bid steal possible conferences, right? And that's the term in indoor where, for example, Conference USA and indoor, right? When Western Kentucky doesn't win, it's oftentimes considered a bid steal. Now, Rice has been in that conference for a few years, so it was less so, but all of a sudden you're watching a Liberty win, you're not going to keep top 25 Western Kentucky out. So that's a bid steal. That's where you've taken an at-large from somebody who maybe has a better resume because you had to give an automatic to maybe a lower team. And that's when a school or when a program or a conference really becomes a two-bid conference as opposed to what we refer to as one-bid conferences. So Conference USA, definitely a bid steal opportunity should TCU not win it, because TCU has to be there.
Yeah.
That is also streaming on ESPN Plus. That is also a Friday and Saturday. Or is it Thursday, Friday, Saturday? I think it might be.
It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday tournament with the streaming only happening on Friday, Saturday for the last four rounds or whatever.
Yeah. Moving on down to D-Land, Florida. We call it D-Land because it's by D-Sea. Five beautiful days in D-Land for the A-Sun schools. They've got their three courts, so they're going to be working really hard to get their 18 double limb tournament through in two waves. You're going to see those matches on ESPN Plus. For the first time in a really long time, the one seed is UNF. The two seed is Stetson, three seed Florida Gulf, four seed North Alabama, five EKU, six Jacksonville, seven UCA, and eight seed Austin Peay. UNF at the top. That is a bid steal possibility right there. Michael, big match from the Osprey. This last weekend, taking down the Burrowing Owls of FAU and the Hatters of Stetson to close out the regular season. What do you think about the A-Sun tournament?
Yeah, I think UNF is on fire right now. And I think, number one, I'm going to take this little moment to pause to let you know, like, this just speaks to how on fire Coastal Carolina is right now as well. Because they took down UNF for the first time as UNF is on this hot streak. But getting that number one seed, this might be the only one seed that isn't completely favored when it comes to this conference tournament. I think Stetson still has that little bit of a favorite going in, especially playing at home. But at the same time, anything could happen. And if Stetson ends up winning it again, I think all is well in the world and we keep on keeping on. If UNF wins it, now you have to bring Stetson into that bubble conversation. And is that conversation a long one? That's up for the committee to decide. But I think they're on the outside looking in. I think this is going to be a one bid conference in a matter of whoever wins it is in, and all the others like had a great season. We'll see you next year. So I think it's fight for your life in this one.
I think CUSA and ASUN would benefit from the committee not wanting to go all eight at-large bids from the West Coast.
Yes.
I feel like that is the most. And I'll take a small moment to express a little bit of chagrin with the voting once again in the top 20. You know, hey, I'm a homer. I'm a homer. I'm not gonna deny it in any way, shape, or form. But I did, you know, our team at Coastal did beat UNF. We are their last loss. We went in there and we played LSU to a 3-2 match. We beat top 20 South Carolina. Corpus Christi won their conference championship, which is awesome for them, and I think they deserve it. We're not even sniffing. We got less votes than South Carolina. We beat them. We just beat them. Is this a joke? Am I smoking something? I'm sorry. That's just my chagrin with voting. It's nothing against any of those other teams. It's not that I don't think Corpus or North Florida deserve to be in the top 20. It's not even that I don't think South Carolina deserves to be in the top 20. I just want to know. What? I just have questions. So anyway, that's my little chagrin. But, you know, hey, Moritz, you can give me a call later this week or shoot, I'll see you in Huntsville in a couple days. You can give me grief for it.
Just know it could be worse. You could not even be in the conversation. So, hey, take the little victories here or there, right?
Okay, Dad. moving on back to the West Coast, we have the WCC tournament. That is an interesting one because it is a one bid conference, but it is a bid steal conference. I think you saw Pepperdine with a run of dominance. It's a double limb event. It's in 2 days. So there's about 6 million matches that you can watch over the course of 2 days on ESPN Plus and ESPN U. It looks like their championship is on. That's pretty sick to see it on full-fledged television. LMU's won the last 2 years. Pepperdine had a run of dominance up until the last couple seasons. You're seeing great growth out of St. Mary's, Santa Clara, even San Francisco have done a really nice job of continuing to grow and advance as a program. The clear favorite is LMU. The clear favorite is LMU, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this is a conference that, like, if LMU doesn't end up winning, I think they've had a good enough season to be definitely implanted into that bubble talk. But it's all depending on what when that loss came and who it came by. And I think that could have bigger implications than what happened during the season. Because they've been in that top 10 category all year. So in order to leave out a top 10 team, you have to have something really bad go on at the end of the season. And so now, with that being said, do I think anything different's going to come out of this tournament than LMU walking away with the championship? No. I think this is going to be one of those, like, by-the-book tournaments that you're going to see LMU just kind of walk their way through. They're going to play hard. They're not going to, it's not that they're not going to get tested, but I think they're going to come out on top of every test.
I think when you consider the fact that it's a two-day event, double limb, and that let's say St. Mary's loses second round to Pepperdine, right? They wind up having to play three more that day just to make it to the final day. Yeah. Like, four matches in a day is bonkers. It's a ton of volleyball. So it's a seed protection. It's a clear advantage to the team that can win their matches as they go through. Yeah, I don't think anything changes for LMU. I can say that if LMU doesn't win, even if they go, hey, we just lost to Santa Clara and then we lost to University of Portland or University of the Pacific, like, even if that worst case scenario happens, you tell me LMU is not in the NCAA tournament, I think that's a bad decision.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we'll have to see it. I mean, LMU does have that first round bye too, in that tough schedule. Like, that could be a huge, huge helper as well.
Yeah.
Moving on to the conference that we talk about the most on this podcast, the Sun Belt. Again, I believe this is going to be a one-team bid conference. I don't think even if Georgia State loses it, that they're going to have to make a dang good argument on why they should be in where they've been sitting the entire year. Now, with that being said, does that mean Georgia State's going in as a heavy, heavy, heavy favorite? No, I think there's a lot of things that could happen over these next 3 days, though, with UNCW, with Coastal on their hot streak. But again, this past weekend, I think Georgia State showed why they are the number one seed, why they are the favorite going into this with their dominant win over a hot Coastal team. But it's really, really hard to come back after a win like that and beat a team again. So catch them on the right day. Who knows?
For the note, right, Georgia State has done something that I think is incredibly impressive. They have not lost a dual point in any of their conference matches. They are 35-0 in Sun Belt play.
I take back what I said about them not being the overall dominant
favorite. Like,
yeah, that's done. That's done.
I'm not saying there aren't going to be a close matches. I think it's hard to beat a good team twice. It's hard to beat a good team three times. Georgia State is going to have to do that at some point. You're going to have to beat somebody who's good two or three times in order to win the conference tournament. So all you got to do is get hot at the right time. But yeah, I mean, all respect to Beth and what she's been able to do with the Georgia State Panthers this year. You know, we just saw them. We ran into that buzzsaw this last weekend, and I think they do a great job. I think one thing to note, just because it's kind of coming up a couple of times, the committee doesn't care about the rankings. What coaches vote for does not dictate how the NCAA selection will go. They have their select criteria that they will vote based on. We have seen them go against rankings time and time again. I think you'll see it most notably with FIU decisions over the past 6 to 7 years. We've seen, you know, many and many a time an FIU team that's maybe ranked high, you know, not get put highly in the tournament or not even go. You've seen teams from the lower rankings. I think South Carolina, when we went, we were ranked for the second year. We went in as the sixth seed, but we at the time were ranked like ninth or tenth in the country. And it was because of how they go based on, you know, overall record, strength of schedule, notable wins, notable losses. Right. And so I think, you know, you're going to see that continue to play a factor. I think Georgia State, while being ranked 15, has a stronger resume in the NCAA's eyes than maybe some other teams ranked a little higher.
That's very true.
That's my two cents. That's my two cents.
And before we move on to our last conference, I'm going to give out one more shout out to the Warhawks. Don't let them get hot. Don't let them get hot. But moving on to the OVC, we're going down to Moorhead, Kentucky for this one. Again, ESPN Plus. I think we said for Sunbelt, that's ESPN Plus as well. So if you want to watch Colin go out there and work his butt off, you can watch that on ESPN Plus. But the OVC, again, a one-team conference where nobody's sitting on the bubble, but the all eyes are on UT Martin and Chattanooga in this one. I think Chattanooga got the best of UT Martin the last time they played, and they came out on top of the regular season. Chattanooga got the regular season title, but at the same time, going into this tournament, UT Martin is going in as the number one seed. So how that works?
They're sharing, right? They both went 9-1. And so they're sharing the conference regular season. Everybody plays twice. So UTM and Chattanooga went 1-1 versus each other.
Right, and Chattanooga beat them 3-2, while UT Martin won theirs 4-1. So that is how they got the number one seed. Chattanooga and UT Martin will have that first round bye. UT Martin number one, Chattanooga number two, number three is Lindenwood. Four is Moorhead. Five is Tennessee Tech. Don't sleep on them. Talk to Zach. He's calling for a conference championship this year. So when that happens, don't be surprised. No eyes wide. Just let Tennessee Tech cook here. And then number six is Eastern Illinois coming into this tournament. But yes, it is probably between UT Martin and Chattanooga when it comes down to it. Again, a double elimination tournament.
The one factor to keep an eye on, Moorhead, Kentucky, not known for their good weather. In fact, if you've watched OVC championships in the past, they've held it there at Moorhead State, and the championship match was played almost in snow. Everybody was in leggings and hoodies. It's going to impact people pretty hardcore. I don't know who that plays a favor for. I'm not sure any of these teams feel better or worse in inclement weather, but the wind is the great equalizer. The cold is the ultimate equalizer, right? If you've seen anybody playing cold. So I think it's anybody's game. It'll be fun to watch. I'm glad it's on ESPN Plus. That team will most likely be the play-in game at the NCAA tournament, which will be 9 a.m. Friday morning, out there in Gulf Shores. I think the question on everybody's mind, who's the other play-in game?
Yeah. That's
Oh, you're going to make me answer this?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about it yet, so I hadn't really, I'm going to say probably, I'll jump in.
I think if any bid steal goes on, right? So if, for lack of a better term, I'll call Coastal winning the Sun Belt a bid steal, or UNCW winning the Sun Belt a bid steal. I think if we win over Georgia State, then we would wind up being in that play-in game. I think any WCC bid steal, if Pepperdine or St. Mary's manages to win that thing, You're going to see them in the play-in game. If UNF bid steals Stetson, or Florida Gulf Coast or North Alabama bid steals, I think you're going to see them in the play-in game. The only conference where maybe the bid steal doesn't happen is if FIU wins the CUSA. I'm not sure they get put in that play-in game. If FAU wins, they're probably in the play-in game.
Yeah.
If Grand Canyon wins the CCSA, I don't think they're put in the play-in game, truth be told. I don't think they've been there. I think you'll wind up seeing, you know, the ASUN champion. If Grand Canyon wins CCSA and Stetson wins the ASUN, I would feel more likely that you're going to see Stetson in the play-in game than you would see Grand Canyon. That's just my two cents there.
Yeah. So, I think, like, now after I had some time to think about it, I think if everything goes as planned, I think you're going to see whoever's the winner of the ASUN be in that play-in game. I think if Georgia State wins, like, I think they're securely in that field and not playing in that play-in game over any of the ASUN teams. Ooh, excuse me.
Yeah, I think that's how you see it. You know, that's kind of where I stand. I think Stetson being a bubble team, they probably don't have the big wins, and they do have the bad losses that'll keep them out. Whereas, as I made the argument earlier, Georgia State, I think, has a stronger resume based on NCAA criteria. I'm not saying that means they're in, right? I'm just saying I think the conversation between Georgia State and Hawaii is a lot closer than the conversation between Georgia State and Stetson as at-large teams.
Yeah.
That's my two cents. That's my opinion.
I will give you my opinion right now, and if I had to put a team like in a sure lockdown going to get a ticket to the NCAA tournament, I'm putting all my money on Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Because that's a good bet. That's a safe bet. I'll go a little gutsier. If I had to put all my money on somebody making the NCAA tournament, I'm going to put every dime I have on the University of Southern California.
All right. We're making bold predictions here on today's podcast. We are in no way condoning betting, especially on collegiate beach volleyball.
I can't gamble on sports. I guess you probably could.
Not yet. I still got another week.
Okay, another week. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, if you're part of the NCAA, you can bet on billiards, horse racing, NASCAR, lawn darts,
little cornhole,
bowling is off limits. Do not bet on bowling.
Water ski.
Can you bet on water ski?
I don't know.
Okay, I know ULM had a great water ski team.
They have a great water skiing team. They keep winning national championships.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's NCAA. So
it is not.
Speaking of sports that we're good at, Coastal is national champs in bass fishing. Once again, I'm not sure it's NCAA, so I think you're kosher to bet on it if you want.
I think bass fishing is actually NCAA. I think they're giving out scholarships for it.
Wow. Okay, so don't bet on bass fishing. Listen, just be safe. Bet on the World Series of Poker. Bet on darts. Bet on horse racing and NASCAR. I think, Michael, we have one more question to answer. I know this has been a longer pod, but will somebody other than a school from the city of Los Angeles win the national championship this year?
My answer is no. I think UCLA is going to come back with some vengeance. I think they're going to get it this year. I don't think it's going to be USC this year, but I think UCLA is going to do it. If I had to choose a school outside of LA, I'm going to go with the safe bet again, and I'm going to go Stanford.
Yeah, I think you'd always like to see Florida State. Florida State's a team that's been there. TCU, a team that kind of knows what it takes. I think you can't shake a stick at that. I think you can't shake a stick at Cal Poly. They just have been a little inconsistent this year. I think the one thing to note is that UCLA or USC in this format where it's single limb, a slip-up is costly. There is no sleeping through matches anymore. And I'm sorry, but if you think that the 15-seeded Georgia State Panthers or the 15-seeded Stetson Hatters, right, are going to be a walk in the park for whoever the 2-seed in the NCAA tournament is, you've got another thing coming. I'm sorry. There is no team. The gap between 20 and one is shrinking every year. And when you get to Gulf Shores and you understand that the wind might be 25 miles an hour and it could be a lightning delay and it could rain, it could do any number of things, that becomes a much closer conversation. So you're right. If I was a betting man, which once again, we're not betting on college beach volleyball, I'm putting my money on a team from Los Angeles. I think this format does open up your great NCAA March Madness, May Madness opportunity.
What a great season it's been so far, though, and it's only going to continue to ramp up in intensity these next couple of weeks, so very excited to watch it, and I get to sit on the comfort of my couch and watch this next championship weekend, flipping through all the ESPN Plus games, and you better believe I'm recording most of these matches just so I have the film for wherever I go next year.
Oh, good. Oh, joy. Huge shout-outs, right? Quick shout-outs once again. Tampa, obviously D2 Natty Champs. Hendricks, I believe, won the D3 National Championship. Weber International won the AVCA NAIA Championship. We do have the NAIA Championship taking place in Greenville, Tennessee. Greenville spelt G-R-E-E-N-E-V-I-L-L-E. Greenville, Tennessee, the home of Tusculum University, hosting the NAIA National Championship. So good luck to those teams. I think that starts the day this podcast is released. So I think it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So shout out to those teams as they're competing. Also shout out to Corpus Christi Islanders, our first conference champion of the year. We're going to name seven more or eight more conference champions this week. Michael, I can't wait to sit there and talk to you from my condo in Gulf Shores, Alabama next week.
Yeah. One more shout out, and that's to everyone who's reached out to me and just expressed their sympathy and their support in what I'm doing and what I stand for. So thank you guys for that.
Amen. Peace, people. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. We'll see you.